voice of some of the Gopis. Lord Shri Guru Shri Gauranga.
Jai Shri Guru Shri Gauranga.
So we're reading in the chapter Srimad Bhagavatam, the disappearance of the Adi Dynasty. We're reading 33 through 38. Mushalava Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mushalava Sheshaya Kanda.
Mushalava Sheshaya Kanda.
Priteshu Lubdhako Jara.
Priteshu Lubdhako Jara.
Mrigashyakaram Tachcharanam.
Mrigashyakaram Tachcharanam.
Vibhada Mrigashankaya. Mushala, from the Iron Club, Aveshesha, remaining, Ayat, of iron, Kanda, with the fragment, Krita, who had made, Ishu, his arrow, Lubdakaha, the hunter, Jara, named Jara, Mriga, of a deer, Asya, of the face, Akaram, having a form, Tat, his, Charanam, lotus foot, Vivyadha, pierced, Mrigashankaya, thinking it to be a deer. Translation. Just then, a hunter named Jarrah, who had approached the place, mistook the Lord's foot for a deer's face. Thinking he had found his prey, Jarrah pierced the foot with his arrow, which he had fashioned from the remaining iron fragment of Shambhu's club. Report. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, the statement that the arrow pierced the Lord's foot expresses the point of view of the hunter, who thought he had struck a deer. In fact, the arrow merely touched the Lord's lotus foot and did not pierce it, since the Lord's limbs are composed of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Otherwise, in the description of the next verse, that the hunter became fearful and fell down with his head upon the Lord's feet, Sukadeva Goswami would have stated that he extracted the arrow from the Lord's foot. Text 34. Together. Chaturbhujam tama purusham Vishva sakrita kirudisha Bitta papatam shirasa Padayo asur drishaha. Then, seeing that four-armed personality, the hunter became terrified of the offense he had committed, and he fell down, placing his head upon the feet of the enemy of the demons. Text 35. Ajanata kritam idam papena madhusudana shantum arhasi papasya uttamashlokame nagaha. Jarrah said, O Lord Madhusudana, I am a most sinful person. I have committed this act out of ignorance. O purest Lord, O Uttamashloka, please forgive the sinner. 36. Yashanushmaranam rinam agyanam dvantanashanam vedanti tascelte vishnu mayasadukritam prabho. O Lord Vishnu, the learned say that for any man, constant remembrance of you will destroy the darkness of ignorance. O Master, I have wronged you. Text 37. Tamashu jahi vaikunta papmanam rigalubdhakam yatapunaraham tvaivam napuyam sadhutakramam. Therefore, O Lord of Vaikunta, please kill this sinful hunter of animals immediately, so he may not again commit such offenses against saintly persons. Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that the fratricidal battle of the Yadu dynasty and the hunter's attack upon Lord Krishna are clearly activities of the Lord's internal potency for the purpose of fulfilling the Lord's pastime desires. According to the evidence, the quarrel among the members of the Yadu dynasty occurred at sunset. Then the Lord sat down on the bank of the Saraswati River. It is stated that a hunter then arrived with the intention of killing a deer, but it is highly unlikely when more than 560 million warriors had just been killed in a great uproarious battle and the place had been flooded with blood and strewn with corpses, that a simple hunter would somehow come along trying to kill a deer. Since deer are by nature fearful and timid, how could any deer possibly be on the scene of such a huge battle? And how could a hunter calmly go about his business in the midst of such carnage? Therefore, the withdrawal of the Yadu dynasty and the Lord's Krishna's own disappearance from this earth were not material historical events. They were instead a display of the Lord's internal potency for the purpose of winding up his manifest pastimes on earth. And the last one. Yashatma yoga rakshitam navidu virincho Vibradayo shatanayak pato giram ne kamayaya piti vishtana padya kintashvati vayam prasad gatayo vima. Neither Brahma nor his sons, headed by Rudra, nor any of the great sages who are masters of the Vedic mantras, can understand the function of your mystic power. Because your illusory potency has covered their sight, they remain ignorant of how your mystic power works. Therefore, what can I say? Such a low-born person possibly say. The purport of text 37 was discussed in length before this by Shyam Kishore and some other devotees to clear up the misunderstanding and the doubts and whatever else was aroused by this whole pastime of Lord Krishna. And these pastimes do that. They arouse some emotions within us, and it's very nice. Actually, these pastimes are meant to serve our souls. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita that he comes here to annihilate the demons and to deliver the devotees. And so this is how he delivers his devotees, as if he engages our minds and our souls in his pastimes. Of course, this one is a little hard to swallow, but it's been made easier by the discussions in the last week. I guess it's just been about. And so hopefully that has been settled. But poor Jara, he's somehow or other, he's been given this role in this pastime, and he is very much suffering right now, realizing that he has harmed the Lord. So he's begging forgiveness. But he mentions in, right here, it says that, O Lord Vishnu, the learned say that any man constant remembrance of you will destroy the darkness of ignorance. So these pastimes are so that we can remember. There's 9 processes of devotional service. And the first 2, hearing and chanting, like we're hearing now and chanting this, will help us to remember. And we read the other morning that Krishna says that if one remembers him at the time of death, then we will go to him, which is the culmination of all these 9 processes of devotional service, that we can remember the Lord by serving and worshiping him, hearing and chanting, serving his lotus feet, and surrendering everything. We will not forget him at the time of death. So even these pastimes, which are very difficult to understand, they actually help us to remember the Lord and his extraordinary activities. Truly, they are not ordinary at all. Proving that Krishna is the only candidate, really, the qualified candidate that can have this position as the Supreme Lord. There's really no running competition whatsoever. Even Spider-Man and Harry Potter and all these other guys, they're not going to, you know, have a chance. I can't understand these people that make up these characters. They really don't meet the match of the Lord's pastimes at all. I mean, they would never, in their greatest creation moments, ever think of pastimes like the Lord has. And so Krishna, he can outdo even, you know, Superman, the mild-mannered Clark Kent, whatever, that changes his appearance and does fantastic things, right? But just to think of the 10 incarnations of the Lord simply has an itch on his back. And what does he do? He transforms himself into a tortoise. Who knows how big this tortoise must be, because he puts a mountain on top of his back, and then he has a big, huge snake. Who knows how long this Ananta chase is, and they use it as a rope, and the demons and the demigods are churning, and all these things are coming out, and so many purposes are achieved by this one pastime. And he gets his back scratched, I guess, but so many other things happen. So who could think of such a pastime? Or on the whole other side, here comes a little humble, teeny tiny Vamandev carrying his umbrella, so cute and beautiful, that he comes in and he actually like upsets the whole sacrifice going on because of his beautiful effulgence. And Bali Maharaj is like, well, what can I give you? You're so beautiful. Surely you would like something. And then the little boy Vamandev, Krishna in disguise, says, I just want 3 steps of land, that's all. He goes, come on, look at my palace. I have so much I can give you. Don't be a foolish little boy. Ask for something big. I am a big giver. He goes, no, that's all. Just 3 steps of land. And I put my feet there, that'll be fine. And what does Krishna do? He doesn't just go to the top of the Empire State Building, like King Kong or something like that. He goes to the top of the universe with 1 step. He's out of this material world. So these are some of the wonderful pastimes. And then, of course, Coming up is Kalki. Who can imagine the scene that Kalki's going to display? Hopefully we're not around for it. But it'll be such a demoniac atmosphere, and everyone will be so miserable. And he finishes them all off just with a sword on a fantastic white horse, going through and liberating them. Because all these pastimes are for the pleasure of the devotees. And so this is what we should try to engage our mind in. Of course, we think of Lord Nrsingadev every day when we chant, of him taking a garland of intestines, and putting it around his neck. But Prahlad Maharaj looking at his beautiful Lord, saying, "Oh, my Lord, how beautiful you are." So this is the special eyes that a devotee have, that they can see the Lord everywhere and in everything. And to this day, they're worshipped. All these other characters, Superman, they have to keep thinking of a new one because they're gone, the old-fashioned. But the Lord's pastimes are there, fresh and antique, but fresh at the same time. So many of these pastimes remain a mystery, but that's healthy for us spiritually, that we are intrigued by actually beginning to meet and learn about this Supreme Person. It's actually what keeps us very anxious to hear more and more and to serve more and more. So it's definitely Krishna's trick to keep us engaged in his service. And then we find in the pastimes contradictions. Like here it seems like there's some contradiction. Did it really happen or didn't really happen? And things like that. So Krishna can do that. That's fine with him. The devotees don't have a problem, really. Because if he did it or if he didn't do it or how he did it or how it seems like, it's all pure and wonderful. And it stretches our faith. The faith is one of our biggest muscles. Even Lord Nityananda says, just purchase the Lord's mercy by faith, that's all. So this is a very important thing that we have to develop, is this faith. And so these pastimes, they are very stretched out, and it stretches out our faith more and more. And that with that faith, it grows like muscles. It gets stronger and stronger and stronger. So that all these doubts, these demons within our minds, that for somehow might come and say, "Oh, now Krishna's not there. Somebody else is." They go away the more we hear. So it's very important to get rid of those doubts. But obviously, here in these pastimes, the greatest crazy thing is to think that we are God. How many people in this room at one point thought that they were God? Yeah, a few of us, right? Somehow or other, we get so illusioned to think that we can actually be somebody like this personality. Not even close. Think of your pastimes. Did you ever do anything out of the extraordinary? Nothing. Maybe you picked up a barbell that was 80 pounds or something, pressed it or something like that. But how we were so illusioned to think that we were God, it's just like, blows my mind to think, how did I get there? How did I think? There's one devotee in this community, she says that she actually thought she could control the sun from rising. And she went on a mountaintop. And guess what happened? The sun rose. Yeah. So then she kind of humbled herself. But we're happy to find out. I was so happy to find out that I wasn't God. It made things a lot easier. And then we could just simply humbly bow our heads and accept the Lord, that we're just a servant. And from then on, our life is simply begging every day for hours and hours, "Oh Lord, oh energy of the Lord, please, please engage me in your service." Remembering Krishna is our goal, and we're all hoping that at the time of death we will remember. There's so many different ways to remember Krishna. We can remember this pastime, which most of us don't dwell on very much. But I know some people like to think about how Krishna is such a trickster, that he's actually very tricky. Here he's actually tricking everybody. The hunter thinks that he did something wrong. So he's definitely perform some amazing stunts, pull some strings here and there to please the devotees. And it started when he was very, very young, probably as about as old as in India, where they don't wear anything except a little black string for protection on. And all of a sudden he hears in his village the mantra of the walas, of the sellers, right? When we used to take our girls to India, we'd go on a train ride and they could like mimic all the walas, you know. Chang, chang, you know, they had them all down, really. Even though they don't know what the words were, they would pretend like they knew what the words were. But they all have their mantras. And so there was this one fruit seller who sat down with a basket of wonderful fruits, and Krishna, wanting some fruits, thought, what can I give her so that I could get some fruits? So he grabbed some grains in his chubby little clumsy hands and ran across the way to give these grains to get some mangoes and whatever. And by the time he got there, all the grains were falling out through his fingers. But the charm of that Supreme Person in his youth made the heart of the fruit vendor say, just automatically, just like give as many fruits as she could put in the hands of that little boy, not wanting anything in return. But Krishna, as a trickster, what did he do? As soon as he went away, her basket filled with jewels, tons and tons of jewels. So this is one of the things he can do. And when he was a little bit older, there was a big festival going on in the village. And all the ladies are getting ready, and everyone's getting all spruced up, and doing pearls and everything. And Krishna goes, well, I want to go to the festival. I want to take my cows, because Krishna's a cowherd boy. He wants to take his cows. But my cows, they need some jewels. So he goes over to the gopis and says, oh, can you just give me a few of your pearls for my cows so I can decorate them? And they go, us give you pearls for your cows? No way. And he goes, well, just two pearls? One for the horn, one for each horn for the cows? No, you go away, you crazy little boy. So he goes back to Mother Yasoda and says, Mataji, I need to decorate my cows. Are there any pearls I can decorate? And he goes, and she goes, I can't find, I don't have any, they won't give me any pearls. And she goes, why don't you just give me a couple pearls and I'll sow them in the ground and then I can grow lots of pearls. And she goes, you silly boy, you can't grow pearls. No, they go in the ocean there, and you know, you have to go deep in the ocean and they provide the pearls. They're very precious. You can't grow them. Just, oh, here, take a couple pearls. And so, by his mystic potency, he's growing pearls, right? You know the rest of the story, that the gopis try, but it don't happen. So, because he has that special relationship with Vrindavan, and he can do anything and everything to please his cows and please the devotees. Of course, the argument grows and grows is also pleasing to the gopis, to have this argument and to be defeated by Krishna. So many different wonderful things he did. Just think of when, after the killing of Kamsa, there was Jarasandh attacking, and so many things were happening in Mathura. He had to figure out how he could get his family members away from Mathura. So in the middle of the night, all the devotees are just sleeping. And then when they wake up, where are they? Dwarka City, beautiful thing out in the ocean, completely on the other side, thousands and thousands of miles away. I can't imagine, you know, what they must have thought. Wow, the ocean, they've probably never even seen the ocean. Wow. Even as a baby, Lord Chaitanya and Krishna, they had like parallel pastimes of sitting in the courtyard, kind of bedecked with some jewels that their mother gave them. And some thieves coming by thinking, those jewels look very nice in such a little boy. I'll just enchant this little boy and take him for a ride, take the jewels, and be rich. And so what happens? Both of them were taken for a ride around, right back to the same place. And so this is also a little mystic potency. Some really nice ones. When Arjuna heard about the death of Abhimanyu, he took a vow that before sunrise tomorrow, I am going to kill this Jayadrath. And so Jayadrath was ordered to take Arjuna far away so that they could try to fight without Arjuna there and try to defeat the Yadus. And Krishna was helping Arjuna, and they were battling with Jayadrath for so far. They were way far away, and it was getting later and later, and Arjuna was not having any success. And all of a sudden, the sun dips just below the horizon. And Krishna's going, I can't let Arjuna kill himself. And he said he'd kill himself. He didn't, wasn't successful. So, boop, up comes the sun, right? Who else could do that? No one. So, and then he was a real trickster when he went in, when Gandhari promised Duryodhan that by my glance, I can make you invincible in this battle. Just come here naked tonight, and I will arrange for that. So Duryodhan goes, this is a little strange, but okay. And so he's walking across the camp, and there's Krishna laughing, saying, what are you doing? Where are you going looking like this? He goes, I'm going to see my mother. You're going to see your mother? I mean, how old are you? And he says, you just can't do that. You know, that's just like, just not reputable. And so he covered his lower self, and when he got there, and Gandhari finally, with her powerful glance, was going to make him invincible, opened the tight veil. What happens? And he says, oh no, why have you covered this part of yourself? Now this part will be fallible. And of course it was. So Krishna really did a number on Duryodhana. And of course Draupadi, that endless claw. Endless. So, and maybe someone in this room knows how Krishna tricked them to become devotees. I've heard many, many stories of how Krishna just did a little something, and they ended up running into the devotees and becoming devotees. So Krishna doesn't stop. And little do we know all the different things that he's done in other planets and other persons. So Krishna, this word Krishna, means the most attractive. And these pastimes are attractive. We love to hear them. We relish them. Even though we've heard them so many, many, many times, they're still very sweet. But Krishna has many pastimes that maybe aren't so sweet, some characteristics that aren't so sweet, some opposite things, just like he is very, very sweet and kind so many times. And then sometimes he's just a real rascal, he's a thief, and he's a debauchee. But it's all wonderful. So we can realize that Krishna has many facets to his nature and allow us to become attracted by one of them, just one of them. If somehow or other we can just bypass our mind from thinking that Krishna is unlimited, or maybe this, or what about this contradiction? It said here, it said there. So if we can just get past our mind, then we can dwell and take that big step of faith up to a different platform, a spiritual platform, a transcendental platform, where none of these material rules work anyway. None of them are considered. It's a completely transcendental realm where we can be very, very satisfied hearing these pastimes and nourish our soul. So even though they're not explainable, if we go to that platform, then it doesn't matter. We can just relish them again and again. So we find that some of us are attached to many different kinds of pastimes. Trivikram isn't here today, but he is totally possessed, obsessed with Mahabharata. Everyone agree? He can't give a class without telling him all the different characters and this and that. I'm totally obsessed with it. Nanda just loves Krishna book, right? Pushkar, Sisi, Chaitanya Charitamrita, like comes out of his mouth automatically. So I mean, I love Nectar Devotion because it's like one of those, it's almost Valentine's Day, one of those heart boxes of samples, they're called chocolate samples, with everyone has a different thing in the scent in the middle, you know? And so like Nectar Devotion, every chapter is like, ooh, it's filled with this goodie, this sweet taste, and another sweet taste, and this pastimes decorating everywhere, all over the Nectar Devotion. So we can, we all have our different things about Krishna, different characteristics that we just simply can relish. And just like in the Nectar Devotion, the one I always like is when Krishna is somehow or other is talking about Jatila, starting to pick on Jatila, the old Jatila, saying that her breasts look like string beans, and her nose looks like the nose of a frog. So, I mean, it makes you laugh, right? Because Krishna is just a lot of fun. And then Radharani comes when he's milking the cows, and he's so possessed by, so distracted by Radharani, he starts tries to milk a bull instead of a cow. I think of that whenever I go to the barn, of Krishna doing that. So, and then there's the competition. Krishna and Radharani and the gopis, they get into these word jugglery competitions where one word can mean this and that, and then they take it and they skew it this way, and it goes in this direction trying to downfall this devotee, and then he turns it the other way and says, oh, thank you, that's a nice glorification. Anyway, it goes on and on, and it's so relishable to hear all these different pastimes. And like Shesha was talking about friends, there's a whole chapter in Nectar Devotion about friends. This kind of friend, intimate friend, there's a servant friend, and then there's simply friends, it says. So many different kinds of friends. And different kinds of flutes. Who can name a size of the flute and how many holes? Or a name of a flute? Murali. That has, it's 18 inches long, and it has 6 holes for whistling. Another one? Venu, how big is that? 6 inches, very small, right? And it has 6 holes also. And then there's a gold one, Arkakshini. It's very long. And then there's another even longer one called Mahananda, which is like 20 inches long. It has 9 holes. And so they're all different kinds of flutes. It's just another sweet bite to keep and to store. If you've noticed the squirrels out here, this time of year, they're running everywhere, squirring. And you know what they're doing? You'll see all over here, there's all kinds of little holes, all along the roads and along the tree lines, because they go and they've stored the nuts. In the fall, you'll watch them. They take the nuts, that are so many, and they go and they make a hole and they put them in there. And somehow or other, this time of year, when they're really hungry, they somehow or other, Krishna gives them, directs them to where they had buried them, and you'll see them. Now they're scurrying, open them, and you'll see them eating because they're hungry. So in the same way, we have to store all these pastimes, and then at the time of death, or when we get down, or whatever, boop, they pop in our mind, and it nourishes, and we can relish these wonderful pastimes. Can you imagine trying to worship a god if you don't know anything about him? I mean, you really don't know anything except that he's almighty, that he's great, and I should just bow down. But just think what they're missing. They're missing relishing all these wonderful, wonderful pastimes. And we can have so much more appreciation for God in so many different ways. We can laugh, like, you know, the pastimes of Krishna competing with his friends and losing, and having to carry his friend on his back. You know, we can laugh at that and realize, oh, what a sweet thing to do. Krishna loses. God, who's in the control of everything, loses in a game. And then we can be very angry at God, too. Just think how he stood up the gopis. How much that must hurt. Like one time I got stood up by a date. That was really painful. You know, I'll never forget that. But we can be angry at God. Because he went in, he called all the gopis of the forest, and then he says, what are you all doing here? Go home, you shouldn't be here, go away. And then he leaves. We can be angry at him. And then we can be very sad at him and very disturbed by his activities. As Lord Ram, whenever I hear what, I mean, I as many times as I've seen the play, and we've done the play, when it gets to where No, he says, put Sita in the fire. Make sure she hasn't betrayed. And then when he takes her to the forest and leaves her there, not even knowing that she's pregnant or anything, I mean, it's painful, you know, it's very sad. So all these emotions are brought up in these pastimes, and it helps us to become very attached to Krishna. And we can only pray that one day that these pastimes completely fill our consciousness. That's what this Krishna consciousness movement is about. We're supposed to fill ourselves and revive that consciousness. It's there, but it's just so covered over. So we can pray that all of our nefarious pastimes can be blotted out so that doesn't pop up in our minds. And that in our wakefulness and in our sleep, that there's a flood of pastimes so that we can meet this personality face to face someday. But we do meet him in our japa. Surely in your japa you hear Krishna and you feel Krishna and you can remember Krishna. And in our service, in our business with Krishna and our family raising, trying to get our kids to be Krishna conscious, that's a challenge. So many things we can absorb ourselves in Krishna consciousness. So at the time of death, we will maybe be fortunate enough to go back to Krishna where we belong. But while we're here, we can also be with Krishna, thanks to Srila Prabhupada. And we can also give Krishna to other people too, which is a special boost to our faith too. So maybe someone has some other pastimes or things that help them remember Krishna, or some questions. Okay.
I was thinking that if you look into other religious practices, almost every one of them that want to practice, they're praying, asking God to serve them in some way. To give me this, give me that, and service. In Krishna consciousness, we are trained not to ask for anything, but just give service. But we find, unlike what you nicely described, how Krishna is serving us. We can, in reciprocation, in so many different ways, by giving all these pastimes, so as to make us attracted to him, yeah, and to give us, let us engage all these different moods that one possesses, like become angry, become sad, become happy, whatever, you know, in all in connection with him. So in that sense, yeah, he's serving everyone more than, you know, without being asked. Yeah. And make really, it a pleasure.
And he's doing that on other planets right now, and he's, we've so many pastimes we haven't heard, I can imagine. So yeah, this is a great service. There is one time when Krishna was challenged about him being tricked. And this personality said, asked him to do something. He said, and Krishna warned him, you know, I'm pretty tricky. You better watch out. And this personality said, don't worry, I'm not going to be, you know, upset about this. It won't affect me. Who is that? His appearance day is coming up pretty soon. Huh? No? Lord Shiva. When he said, I really want to see your form as a woman. And Krishna said, no. Yeah, you can't handle that. No. You know, Shiva goes, don't worry about it. I can handle anything. I'm Shiva. Right? And what happened? Ooh, he was completely bewildered. And we know the rest of the story. So don't doubt that Krishna is the supreme. Yes.
I have one question. Okay. Yeah. You know, when throughout the Bhagavatam we find like different devotees or personalities may approach the Lord, and they may be very attracted to the Lord, they're very attracted like this example with this fruit seller, and she wants to give something. But in this, our present verses here, with Jarrah, he immediately recognized this as the supreme personality of Godhead. So, do you have any knowledge of that or any background as to how?
Anyway,
how come he immediately, because we never heard of him before, how
he
come
must
he recognize?
Have heard of him before. I mean, he must have heard of him before. Now, obviously, he was had a special role. Must have been a special devotee. And you did comment about what was it, that devotees don't usually pray for things, but you'll find that, like Prahlad Maharaj and different devotees, when they're asked benedictions, Sudama, the flower garland person, I'll give you a benediction. They pray, just don't let me forget you. So that prayer is okay. You got me there?
I finally understood what Shyam Kishore was trying to convey the other day by the one word in the purport today. It said that this is not a historical event, but a display of the Lord's internal potency.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it really, that word historical just was the way to express it, you know, the dichotomy, apparent dichotomy. Also, do you know what Jarrah also means old age, does it not? Is it the same accent?
I don't know
accent?
Anything about Sanskrit, so where the slash is, I don't know. It's not the same. Okay, all glory to Srila Prabhupada, all glory to Springboard pastime.